When we talk about future-proofing careers, yes, AI is coming. Yes, that's the future. But one thing that I think you're amazing at is building your online brand. Why do we do it?
It is to absolutely future-proof ourselves. When a recruiter sees my LinkedIn profile, they are interested in my thought leadership, the diversity that I will bring, the diversity of thought that I bring, and that is what creates opportunity. It's not what you know. It's not who you know. It's who knows what you know.
There are amazing skills that will never be automated away. As an engineer, I found the AI industry is automating away what we do, but the thing that is the most important thing that an AI engineer does is persuade people that their system is trustworthy enough to be used. And that is a human thing.
What are the opportunities? Actually, one of the things I love hearing the most is how do you increase your surface area for luck? And to do that is just to put yourself out there as much as possible and to be curious and to be open.
Hello and welcome to this very special episode today on the Career Confidence Podcast. I'm absolutely thrilled to be sharing this with you. So for those of you that don't know, myself and my business partner Pam hosted an event in Melbourne CBD a few weeks ago, Future-proofing your career in the age of AI. It was an absolutely incredible night. I always come away from these events feeling so uplifted and inspired. And we recorded the whole thing to share with you. So if you couldn't make it, strap in because you're about to learn lots and hopefully feel exactly how I felt when I stepped off the panel, which was truly inspired and very optimistic about the future and also equipped with a lot of skills that I believe are going to be essential in this new world of work that we're about to enter into. So just to sort of set the scene, we had an incredible panel of women. So we actually had three women that have been on the podcast previously. So what we'll do is we'll link those episodes below. So if you haven't listened to those episodes yet, please do. But our first panel guest was the incredible Samantha Lengyel, who is the co-founder of Decoded AI. She's doing some incredible things in the AI space. So definitely go and check her out, listen to what she's got to say, because it was absolutely fascinating. We've also got the incredible Sarah Agbula. She's also been on the podcast, as mentioned. She is the co-founder of MTime, incredible app helping busy mums get their time back. So she said some absolutely incredible things, very relatable, and had some really interesting viewpoints about the future of work. And finally, we have Mary Beth Hosking, who has also been on this podcast. She is an incredible CEO, comes from a very interesting background, used to be a singer, now she's in technology. So her story is very relevant, I think, to a lot of people. But honestly, this whole event was absolutely incredible and so many people took so much away from it. But in terms of the themes that we discuss, we spoke a lot about personal branding, why it matters so much in the future of work, being a thought leader. We talked about having a growth mindset, why you're going to need to be resilient and adaptable in this constant changing landscape. We spoke about the things that potentially we're concerned about when it comes to AI, but also the opportunities that are out there right now for the taking. Look, I honestly felt that we do need to be preparing ourselves for what's to come. And if we're not preparing ourselves, we could potentially fall behind, which is why I'm so excited to share this episode with you today. I really hope you enjoy it. I would absolutely love your feedback. So reach out to me on LinkedIn, very active over there, and really enjoy today's episode. And I look forward to hearing from you. And thank you so much for tuning in every single week. It absolutely means the world to me. And if you haven't yet hit that subscribe button, please do, and enjoy today's episode.
Thank you, Kyle. Very warm introductions as always. Again, thank you so much to everyone for coming. It's just so amazing to see such a wonderful crowd again tonight and some familiar faces and some new ones. So thank you for coming. We'll start off where we always start off with our introductions, and you know you better than I ever will. So I actually really love to hand it over to yourselves to introduce yourselves individually. You've all got amazing careers to talk to. You all have varied experiences. So if you could just sort of give us an overview of who you are, where you've come from, your business or project you're working on at the moment, but also I think what's of interest is give us an insight into how you actually got started in your tech career. So I'll go with you first, Sam.
All right.
I'll hand over to you first. You go. You're fun as a bullet.
Okay. Awesome. Hi, everyone. I'm Sam. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Decoded AI. We're a tech tool for AI teams to de-risk their investments in AI systems. Who I am, I love cats and I love tango dancing. So I do that in my spare time. How I got started in technology was a lot by chance. I think a lot of us might have a similar story by that. I was friends with the right people, interested in things that was accessible to me in university, and wound up in the AI industry. So that is who I am.
Hey everyone, my name is Sarah and I'm the founder of MTime. And we give busy parents their time back by matching them with family assistants. We train to do a mixture of housekeeping and nannying tasks. And as part of our social impact, we... You're all very... but as part of our social impact, we actually work with different charities, not-for-profits and community organizations to help women who have been long-term unemployed re-enter the workforce by helping them become those assistants. I actually stepped out of the business at the end of last year and put a team in place to run it on my behalf. And so now I've been working as an operations consultant because one of the things I love the most is just figuring out how to make things happen. Like you, I fell into it. I started MTime as soon as I finished uni. So it's the only job I've ever really had. And that was really because I just went to a hackathon and thought, wow, starting a business sounds really cool. And just pursued it ever since then. So, and my... Something else about me, I read tarot cards. I picked it up in COVID and it's a lot of fun. Yeah. So thank you.
Excellent. Wow. I feel really old. I know I don't look it, but you know, I look fabulous to my age, but holy shitballs, guys. I started out as a singer. So I was singing in opera and then I was not good enough for the adult opera and I knew that and I thought I'm going to move to Melbourne and become a star. That's what I'm going to do. And I moved to Melbourne, but I didn't become a star. And I had a massive moment, a moment where everything in my life was about singing. All I wanted to do was sing and that was all I would talk about and it was everything. And then it wasn't. And then I had a decision to make and it was like, oh my God, if that's not what I'm going to do, then what's my identity? Who am I? What is it? What does that career pivot look like? And so I didn't fall into stuff because I'm a planner. I like to plan and I know, I want to know what's next. And so I planned out what I wanted to do and I always wanted to be in the C-suite. And I wasn't sure what organization I would want to work in. I had no idea. I was a singer, for goodness sake, but I mean, I remember that last gig I sang, it was at a wedding and it was 7 hours of singing and I sang Mustang Sally 6 times in that 7 hours. Mustang Sally. And you know what? I just never want to hear that song again. And I remember saying to my husband at the time, if I have to sing that damn song again, I'm going to hang myself. But I knew I needed something. I needed a change. And so I planned out what that would look like. And I just executed on that strategy. I course corrected. I did all of those sorts of things. I had to find and dig down deep and find out what my transferable skills were so that I would be taken seriously. It took 30 interviews to get my first role. But having done hundreds of cattle calls and auditioning for shows where you don't even get the chance to open your mouth to sing because you just don't have the right look, I was used to that and quite resilient. So I did a major career pivot. And my first temping gig was at this little company in South Bank called Apple Computer, 1991. And I remember being told off by the general manager because I called it Apple Computers. And he said, there's no S, it's just Apple Computer. And he showed me this lovely little application, which I actually thought, this is never going to take off. It was called email.
So for the person in the audience that we chatted earlier and you asked me what's the next thing in what's the next thing in AI, I'm not a futurist. I'm just going to give you that now. But I decided what I wanted to do and I planned and I worked and I kept working and every setback was another data point. Really important. Every setback was a data point. What am I not doing quite right? What do I need to shift? What do I need to change? What is it that's going to get me to where I am now? And so I am now the CEO of Vic ICT for Women. And I was saying to Georgie earlier, I was a CIO for PointsBet, a gaming and wagering organization, which for some of you that have spoken to me already, is an organization that's like walking into your son, your 15-year-old son's bedroom. Just doesn't smell as bad sometimes. And I just thought, this isn't resonating for me anymore. Yes, I'm in the C-suite. Yes, I've achieved that, but that wasn't enough. I do a lot of public speaking and I just thought, if I have to stand up in front of another audience of 300 to 400 delegates and see 5% women in amongst all of those delegates, it's not enough. We've not shifted the dial. So for me, it is amazing to see so many women and our allies in this space. So long story short, CEO, Vic ICT for Women, always looking for volunteers and sponsors and link with me on LinkedIn because I would love to keep the conversation going.
Thank you, everyone. I think that we can all agree, amazing panel, and I am just so excited to be sitting next to all three of you. So thank you so much for coming. But Mary Beth, you've got the, well, now you've got the mic. I want to come to you first because one thing you are incredible at is building your online personal brand. When we talk about future-proofing careers, I think that's the first thing I want to touch upon because yes, AI is coming. Yes, that's the future. But one thing that I think you're amazing at is building your online brand. Now, why do you do that? Why do you think it's important? And when we talk about the future and future-proofing our careers, what advice would you have for people that want to get started? And where did you begin as well? Who to you?
All right. So for me, I engaged an executive coach when I wasn't getting the next steps. I was pushing and I wasn't pushing into the C-suite. It just wasn't happening. And I'd spent 8 years trying to get there. And I thought, I have to do something different. And I've done everything I know from my perspective. I need a different set of eyes. I need somebody else to look at this. And one of the things she said to me, which absolutely resonates with me now, and I'm going to say it to you, and it's not a secret, but it's not what you know. It's not who you know. It's who knows what you know. Okay? So think about that. Are you seen in your organizations as a workhorse, the person that just gets it done? Oh, I'm just going to give it to Mary Beth because she just gets it done. And then you see your boss get the next promotion and the next promotion while you're doing all the work. That's you. You've got to do something to shift that. And it's all about branding. So there's internal branding, external branding. So what it is that your workplace sees of you, what is it that the decision makers in your workplace see of you? That's your internal branding. Your external branding is what does the public see of you? So what, you know, if I do speaking engagements, what do you see? Do you look at me and go, oh, I want to do what she's doing. She makes that look so easy. Is that what you want to see? Is that your external brand? But your virtual brand, and in Australia, really important. LinkedIn is really big here, not as big in other countries, but really big in Australia. And what you need to understand is what your value is, what your personal value proposition is, and then create that vision on LinkedIn, on that social media platform. If you link with all of you link with me on LinkedIn, you will absolutely understand my brand. Was CIO for change, CEO for change, because I want to make change in whatever place I'm in. But you get that. When you see my brand, you see my posts, my newsletter, etc. It's all wrapped around my brand. And that's so important. And one thing that I was told, don't change your hair now. Your hair's like that. Your hair's got to stay like that. Because that's what people know. And you know what? It's better than the original advice I got from a previous boss who said to me, my hair's very curly. And he said to me, your hair's very curly. You come across as crazy and unhinged. This is why, this is why you're not getting into the C-suite. If you straighten your hair, you'll get into the C-suite. So I straightened my hair and I looked in the mirror and thought, I don't know who that is because that's not me. And then I didn't get into the C-suite and I thought, well, that's bollocks, isn't it? Embrace who you are. So yeah, so I won't be able to change my hair. But why do we do it? Why do we do it
It is to absolutely future-proof ourselves. So I always keep LinkedIn updated. It is about thought leadership, value creation. It is not about me and hey, I'm really awesome. It's about the value that I can create for those that look at my LinkedIn profile. When a recruiter sees my LinkedIn profile, they are interested in my thought leadership, the diversity that I will bring, the diversity of thought that I bring, and that is what creates opportunity. So that's why it's really important to think about your LinkedIn profile. Have a look at mine and look at other people that you have seen speak and that sort of thing, and have a look at what they've done and start thinking about it for yourself. Takes a little bit of time, but it is absolutely worthwhile, and it will create the elusive sponsorship that all of you probably will sit back going, I've got a coach, I've got a mentor, but I don't know if I've got a sponsor. It will help cultivate your sponsorship.
Amazing. Yeah, no, thank you so much, Mary Beth. And I think we can all definitely take something away from that and in order to make sure that we are future-proofing our own career. Be visible, be seen. So thank you very much for that.
Be heard. Lady, be heard.
Samantha. Oh, I've went for Samantha. We were having the Samantha-Sam debate. She answers to both. Now
your answer to Sammy, sir.
Sammy. So you recently pitched at Startup Victoria, not only in front of 500 people, but you also won. Huge. Well done.
Woo!
Thanks. I'd like to deserve a work. Yeah. Now, talking about sort of future-proofing our career, speaking up, using our voice, public speaking, I personally feel is going to be such a key skill for the future of work. Now, that is the kind of skill that a lot of individuals, sometimes women in particular, really struggle with. Can I ask what your own personal journey has been with that? How have you become comfortable with public speaking? How do you prepare for it? And any advice that you could share with the audience?
Absolutely. That was a terrifying experience, but I loved every minute. So I very much focused on what was important with that pitch. So I was persuading the audience to be interested in my product, to feel emotions when I was speaking. So when I practiced in my office, I actually envisioned the audience. I had a picture of the auditorium that I was going to be at, and it was very interesting. I had the fight or flight response. I got sweaty. My heart was racing, and that was during practices. And what I realized was when you put yourself in that position, when it's actually happening, when you're in front of the audience, it's much easier and you can handle the nerves. So I think my advice for anyone pitching or public speaking or communicating to a group of people is persuade them, be concise, be confident, because language is all about connecting with people and getting your idea across. And if you can do that well, then you might well win a pitch as well.
Amazing. And Sarah, I want to come to you next. So speaking of awards, you've won a copy yourself, Forbes Under 30 and Small Business Leader of the Year 2022. Incredible. In your personal experience, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What does it take mindset-wise to really succeed in business, in your career, in this current climate? What advice would you have for those out there that just want to hit their goals, advance in their careers? And if you look back at younger Sarah, any advice that you'd have for her when she was starting her journey?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I think of my younger self, I think the thing that was kind of driving me at the time was that I didn't know what I was getting myself into. And it seemed like just a really exciting thing, something really interesting and really cool way to learn. But I think if I look back on that now, I realize what I actually had was a growth mindset. And so no matter what was happening, all the challenges that came through, especially since I didn't know what I was doing, I was a solo founder, so I had to figure out everything on my own. It was just that curiosity and that desire to actually, how do I excel? How do I keep growing upon this? So one of the things that really helped me get through all the difficult times was really just that I could keep seeing the outcome of what I was doing. Like I could tell that I was growing. And that's something that I really appreciate in small business, because you're never a cog in a machine. Every single action you take is going to have a direct result on your customers, your community, and all the people you work with. So I think even now, as we had like a really difficult time during COVID, I think interestingly in 2021, we had, I think, 3 consecutive weeks of trading was like the best that we got. Otherwise, we had to just keep closing and simultaneously trying to open in different markets just so that we could keep going. And it was really tough. But the fact that there was always something else to try, there was always something else to learn, was what really kept me going. And now as I've moved out of the business and doing it for other companies, that's still what really excites me. Just this morning, I was being introduced to another team and they were like, oh, we just love that you love how difficult operations is and how complex. But I do, because I see it as just problem solving, and every day you're learning something else. And I get extremely satisfied when I'm like, okay, we've got this workflow going. This is great. And just having that in mind whenever I tackle a new problem has just made every day a lot more fun, when it could have been a lot more difficult.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. I wanted to quickly pop in and talk to you about our amazing supporter, CH Talent Solutions. We are an IT and digital recruitment company based in Australia. If you are someone right now looking for a new opportunity or considering a career pivot, please reach out to one of our consultants. Or if you are somebody looking to build your team or build your company or scale, again, please reach out to us if you are looking to find the best tech talent fast. I look forward to connecting with you. Now back to today's episode. Enjoy.
Thank you so much. This next question is one for the panel. So I'm really interested to hear your individual thoughts and opinions on this. So it is predicted that up to 34% of jobs are at risk of being lost to automation by 2040, which is a very confronting stat to read. And I think that's where a lot of the fear starts with AI, when people are seeing those sorts of headlines. Now, part of our mission for Sisterhood Club is really to ensure that women are not going to fall prey to these statistics. You know, that we're encouraging women to pay attention, like what is going to keep them at the forefront, keep their careers moving, keep them really relevant in their skill sets, and know what the emerging trends are. So in your opinion, what can individuals and what can organizations do to encourage more women to pursue a career in tech, keep their skills up to date, and just really ensure that as technology evolves and as AI continues to become more embedded in our day-to-day lives, that the gender gap gets smaller and not larger. And Sam, you're right to my left, so I'll throw to you first.
I want to start with that, with talking about how artificial intelligence is so different from other technologies and why this is kind of scary to us. So to me, artificial intelligence is about ceding a decision to an autonomous system that actively co-shapes us. And what this is power. We are encoding power in technology. So when we talk about it in response to the gender pay gap, of course, it will exacerbate these sort of problems in our societies when it's built off that data, built off those ways of thinking. The way that organizations can understand and better support our community, I believe, is by understanding how we see these decisions and be a lot more intentional with this. So in my opinion, when you understand the limitations of what you're giving to a technology, you can better control it, you can better wield it to actually get the benefits from the system. Did I answer that?
Yeah, no, yeah. That's a bullet.
I think in my view, and I have this view of tech generally, but especially in light of hearing those statistics, I wish that we would see more organizations expanding our view of how we can use AI. So similar to what you were saying, I think of it in terms of, this might seem like a silly example, but if you guys are across like a Who Gives a Crap, amazing company. Why is that a tech company, whereas someone who's got an e-commerce company that's doing fulfillment isn't, in terms of how we let people seek funding and grow and access different opportunities? Even like the pitch night at Startup Vic, what counts as a tech company? So if we have that same view and we expand what we look at when we consider what is an AI company, is someone who's actually just building on top of ChatGPT to do something random, like a friend of mine is actually trying to do an interpretation tool for different spiritual practices as well. And she's having a bit of trouble getting through because it's like, oh, you're just building on top of it. Is that really AI? And I'm kind of like, how come this doesn't quite match? But I feel like if it was something that was a bit broader, maybe not as female focused, it would still have a bit more of access. So that's something that I hope we see a change in, of just expanding what counts as an AI business, what counts as an AI product. And I think as we do that, we'll see different perspectives and different people entering the space.
That's great. We're still going to need leaders. AI isn't going to lead us. Okay, so if organizations need to invest in their technical leaders and the leadership in their organizations. I don't think that that's going to go away. The gender piece and the gender pay gap and all of those sorts of things, we're at the pinnacle now. We need to make a difference. We need to be, all of you in this room, if you don't know how to negotiate higher salaries, learn. Speak with a mentor, but you need to be earning what you deserve. You need to be making inroads yourselves. You need to be really forcing it. And if your organization is so backward that it doesn't see your value, then find somewhere else, honestly. We can sit back and we can carry on about not being given opportunities and things. We need to make them happen. Absolutely need to start making them happen. Don't go in, you're going to go in for a salary increase. Go in for more than you, just honestly go in. Don't say, I think I deserve more. Go in and say, this is the value that I have created and this is what I deserve and what I want to be earning. But we still need leaders. So what do we need to do? What do we need organizations to do to really understand leadership, to invest in people and make them better leaders so that we get the most out of our tech teams? And then also embrace these other technologies and not be afraid of them. I mean, it's like anything. I used to work in transport and logistics, and there was a time that you didn't have sign-on glass, right? It was a time when it was paper consignment notes, and, you know, there was a lot of work to actually get somebody to be able to sign on a PDA. So, you know, this stuff is there to help. Have we lost courier drivers? No, we still have courier drivers. Will autonomous vehicles get rid of courier drivers? Maybe, but maybe not. But anything in this space will create more roles. There'll be job creation. They'll just be different. So educate yourselves. And as you were saying earlier, be elastic in your thinking. Have a growth mindset. Don't close yourselves off because you're afraid of what's coming. Go into it with your eyes wide open.
Thank you. Amazing answers. And that leads me really nicely to my next question, which is, of course, yes, jobs are going to be taken away, but more are going to be created. So I would love to know now, or your predictions are, and you know, what? Okay. Maybe it won't come to you, Mary Beth. But no, like, what do you think the skill gaps are going to be, and what things would you encourage people to learn? Like, you know, just we'll go to you, Sam, first. I feel like you're going to have lots to say on this.
I agree with you. I think human connection is the skills that will be sought after. Talking. How we communicate, but more than it's the emotions we feel when we talk to another human. I think that is when I go tango dancing to dance with another person, not with a machine. So there are amazing skills that will never be automated away. As a engineer, I found the AI industry is automating away what we do, but the thing that is the most important thing that an AI engineer does is persuade people that their system is trustworthy enough to be used. And that is a human thing.
Thank you. I think one of the skills that I think will be, I suppose I should start by saying this isn't necessarily a prediction, but a hope. but I think one of the skills that I hope will be really important is collaboration. Similar to what you were just saying, that yes, AI might be taking away a lot of jobs, but I hope that our ability to collaborate with these tools and actually think of interesting ways to use them is actually like going to be a job of the future. Like one of the things I can think of now is I'm trying to design a system to help people who work in warehouses pack things faster. And so we're looking at how we can use AI to recognize all the different items that they're packing to reduce the number of errors. And that will also make their job easier. They can get more done a lot faster. And that's something that we as humans are thinking of. What are the creative ways that we can use all these new tools that are coming? So I'm hoping collaboration and creativity will just become really valuable.
Grain of salt with this comment. Okay, so I used to be a CIO, and tech debt is the one thing that is the bane of our existence. But I think we reframe that. It's modernizing. We need to start thinking about modernization of all of the old tech that we've got. So if you want to start thinking about where are the next big spaces, I think it's going to be in the modernization of old tech. So certainly in finance, I mean, they're still using COBOL, for goodness sakes. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done in modernizing. And as tech rapidly changes, the debt is created so fast, you can't actually get to it. And I think that AI is going to help us recognize what that modernization is going to start looking like. And I think that that is going to be an area that we need to focus on. Also need to start thinking about bad actors and what it is that they're doing. So if you're in the tech space, security, man, I was saying this earlier, get yourself across what's happening in the cybersecurity space and what AI can do to help with that, because you know that the bad actors are out there using AI to actually try to, you know, increase their throughput, because they are businesses just as much as you're working in other businesses. So I think that they're two really big areas, but it's also about knowing the tools. Get yourself across the tools. You can just do OpenAI tools and it will bring you a plethora of lists of things that you can start playing around with. So start really thinking about that.
Thank you. Sam, we're going to come to you next. As a co-founder of Decoded AI, you're at the forefront of innovation in this space, and there is a lot of fear. You know, you speak to anyone about AI, the first thing that they actually come up with is their concerns. But there is also a lot of excitement about the evolution of AI and how it could be used for good. So this is a little bit of a double-sided question. Like, being in the space, what scares you? What are you frightened of? Like, what are your main concerns about it? And on the other side of that, what excites you most about it, and what possibilities do you feel that it could bring to the future of work?
I think it's a really good question, because anything of importance has those two sides of, like, the negative or the positive, the risks and the opportunities. So this exact same thing is with AI. I kind of want to bring back to my first point that I brought up about AI being a mechanism of power. What really scares me about AI is when a small group of people make decisions at a macro scale, at a micro granularity, because that is what is possible with artificial intelligence. And when this isn't shared with the rest of the population, or when we don't have a choice whether we have this decision ceded to this machine. An example, if I want to use social media, I'm ceding the decision of whatever I see is based on the algorithm that people have decided. So that scares me. But along that, the opportunity of ceding decisions, to me, a society where we don't have to have humans do dangerous tasks because a machine can do it for us. That is exciting. There is so much opportunity that can be reaped when we understand the limitations and can wield that appropriately.
Great answer. So it's not going to be Terminator.
No.
It's not going to be iRobot. We're not going to just suddenly be, you know, running around the street and, okay, that makes me feel a bit calmer. Mary Beth and Sarah, this is to you now. I would love to know how you're using this technology, if you are using this technology. I know for ourselves at Sister Club and CX Solutions, we are using an incredible tool. Go speak to my husband afterwards, Kyle, to edit all of our podcasts, to create amazing video edits. Like, it is saving us so much time at the moment in our business. It's a huge time saver, huge productivity tool, but I'd love to just sort of know how you're using it day to day as well, and if there's any particular programs or things that you're like, give this a go. What are the tips and behind the scenes, anything to share?
Yeah, well, for me, at MTime, I've given it to my team to help with our marketing, all our content creation to help come up with new ideas. even when it comes to like what are the events we can create for our community of family assistance, that's some of the things that we're doing there. But in my consulting work, it's, as I said, of helping people with their packing. How do we make that easier? How do we eliminate mistakes? How can we actually enable people to actually be able to work from home rather than having to go into a warehouse? Because I think all those frontline workers have been left out of like some of that flexibility. So that's one of the things I'm quite passionate about, of like, how can we enable that a lot more? So again, it's a lot of experimentation. Like, I'm still kind of going through and seeing what's possible. So I'm keen to hear.
So at points, Bet, we were using, I was in charge of the AI team as artificial intelligence, machine learning. And because it was gaming, it was really designed and focusing on how do you bet? What are you betting on? So very similar to something like Netflix. If you've watched this, then you might be interested in watching that. So it's the same sort of thing. You've bet on this sport or this activity, or you've bet in this way, then this is something that might interest you. So that's how it gets used in that sort of a form. It really is the same idea. It's that just really looking at what your behaviours are and how it can better predict. So it's predictive models really that it's looking at. So that was my exposure to it in that space. But a lot of the devs were starting to use ChatGPT and things just as like a, I guess, a, I would say like a, I want to say peer programming, but not really, but to sort of just help them do that. But I use ChatGPT personally. So I've only been the CEO at Vic ICT for 4 weeks, and there's certain things that aren't there that I need to produce. And I'm just going to throw that stuff into ChatGPT because it'll just produce something that's easy that I can tweak it to do what I need it to. If I need a policy around governance around social media, I'm just going to put it into ChatGPT because, quite frankly, it'll put something together that I can tweak later. But I don't use it personally for things like my LinkedIn posts because they're really personal to me. That I don't do that because I think that content creation is from my heart. That's really important to me. My writing, like, you could write a book in ChatGPT, but my books are me. They're part of me. So I don't use those sort of mechanisms for that because I don't know. I think it's cheating. Yeah. But yeah, that's how we used it at Points Bet. Vic ICT, we don't.
So on that, that's really interesting because you found the value in your LinkedIn is in your original thought, because nothing new will ever be created with ChatGPT. It is trained on the data.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that. No, it's just so interesting, and that is a very important point that you've just touched upon. But I do think, look, at the end of the day, when change is coming, I think the message is for everyone to get involved in it and embrace it. You know, the only thing that's constant in life and our careers is change. So definitely get involved.
Out of curiosity, how many have used ChatGPT?
Oh, so Rachel fans. Yeah. That's amazing to see. Good question. So this is another one to the panel. And it's probably around ethics, right? Which we've literally just touched upon a little bit there. But what do you think are like the ethical implications of AI when it comes to, you know, the future of work? And do you have any thoughts on the importance of AI and the evolution of this next phase of the internet? Just like not falling into the same hands as what has happened with like Web 2, you know, like for example, Facebook, you know, all the data mining, you know, you think you're using it just to, you know, use it, have a little bit of fun and, you know, post a picture, you know, it is your data. You know, what are your thoughts? What are your opinions on that?
Ethics in AI is very difficult because, as we all know, ethics is very contextual. One person's ethical idea might be completely different to the next person. And with AI, that is amplified tenfold. In the past year, hundreds of ethical AI frameworks have been released because it's so context specific. And one ethical framework won't fit for all. So I come at it from a very different perspective. When you understand, I sound like a broken record, but when you understand what the decision you're ceding to this system, you can better understand, well, what do you need in place for it not to do people wrong? So if it's in the context of HR, and choosing candidates, the decision is filtering people into humans.
eyes. So understanding the things you need in place before you let that happen and to be taken over. That's what ethics is to me.
My thoughts are more almost just my fears around it, if I be very honest. Because of exactly what you said, I think of things like hiring, I think of the people who are, I guess, seeding the questions that we're asking, and I think who is going to be left behind. And my biggest fear is that it's going to be the same people who are left behind before, and then the social inequity is just going to increase further and further. And I think we see that even already to some degree when we think of who are the leaders in this space. And like, as you've made the point, like it is largely older white men, or even in tech companies now, I think like it's quite interesting, actually. It's still often it's going to be a big group of guys who are kind of making all the decisions, and we're starting to see more women in products. But even then, you're kind of stakeholder managing, like you're influencing, but you don't necessarily have authority. So my fears around it is just how are we going to actually ensure that what comes out of it is going to be fair for everyone? And I don't know if there's going to be a clear answer for it.
I don't know that I have much more to add to that. I know, shocking, isn't it? But you're right. It's the unconscious bias. If you want to do something for your organizations, do more training in that space. Get them to take their ESG targets seriously. Because I think these models, these large language models, they need to be reflective of the populace, the entire population, not just a subset and a subset of a subset. Because if we don't do that, then that, my fear is, as you've absolutely said, we will lose diversity of thought. It's, you know, it's not the color of your skin, it's not your religion, it's not any of that, it's how you think. And if you just hire people for diversity of thought, and you're just going to get the most amazing organization. But we have to do the same in ChatGPT, and I agree. And that's the thing that scares me the most, because I just don't think that those people that are the decision makers. My God, I don't. Who wants, you know, Amazon up there making all of the decisions for us? For goodness sake, what's his name? Basil. Put him up in another spaceship.
All right. Look, final question before we go to a Q&A. What, in your opinion, is the one skill that we should all work on to future-proof our careers for the future? Mary Beth, off you go. The one skill, what are you working on personally? Anything that you just have for the audience to take away tonight?
Curiosity. Stay curious, okay? I know things are scary. Stuff will happen in your lives so unexpected, and you will sit back and you'll go, I didn't see that coming. But stay curious, because you will always find a way through. There'll always be a problem to solve, and you're all problem solvers in this room. So don't be afraid. Stay curious. Stay open.
You stole mine. No, but truly, I have to just completely echo that, because I would say curiosity and growth. Again, it's just, what are the opportunities? Actually, one of the things I love hearing the most is, how do you increase your surface area for luck? And to do that is just to put yourself out there as much as possible, and to be curious and to be open. So having that growth mindset as well.
For me, the thing I'm always working on is letting go of knowledge shame. It's, for me, the thing that has catapulted my career and the way I think. What I define as knowledge shame is, if you read something, if you hear something that you don't understand and try to understand and you still don't understand it, that's fine. You're pushing the boundary of how you think and embracing that. And hopefully at some point later, like, kind of putting it to the back of your mind or somewhere and coming back to it, you might actually understand it. So that's what I'm working on always.
I love that. Knowledge shame. Isn't it sort of it's that extension of failing fast, isn't it? How many times have you been in a meeting and it's like, oh, I don't know what they're talking about, and so I'm not going to say anything. Instead of, I was in a meeting once, I remember this, warehousing, tie high. You'll know what tie high is.
No, only just.
Oh, and he just said, okay, so tie high is the number of rows versus the number of high of cartons on a pallet, right? Yeah. You don't think that was really simple. I'm in a meeting, 8-hour meeting, and they're talking about tie high, and I had no idea.
No, that's what I said that would be. That was, I just learned what bidding is, and I was like, oh my gosh.
But I sat there like, I just
I don't know what to do here. And I was deer in the headlights, and like, just so afraid to say something. I was much younger. Now I don't care.
Now I'll just say it. It's like, now I'll complain if the food's bad.
But that's the construct of schooling, where we're tested. Our knowledge is based on what we can recall and what we can say, not how much we're willing to grow and extend our mind. And nothing against teachers, but that's just how the system is created. So that's
I think that's a beautiful way to round off the panel. So can everyone give a round of applause for this amazing man?
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.